Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Semi-Professional Academic Podcast. As always, I am your host with the most random Chargers on the floor, Jacob Watts. And joining me today is the hilarious, the iconic, the rock star, Hartley Powell, everybody.
Hi. That was such a kind intro.
Hartley, thank you for coming onto the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I'm really excited to do this.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm going to be real with my audience, which I'm real every week and expose and embarrass myself every week, I feel like. But I was so nervous to ask you to come on the show because I was like, no, she doesn't really know me like that well. And I don't know if this is going to come off creepy. Like, I just want this, like, because I really respect like what she's doing and I think she's cool. But like, I don't know how to like go about it. You know what I mean?
No. I get it because I feel like we've been mutuals for a very long time online. But I get that, like, I have people that I've, like, known, but then I'm like, would I message? Like, I'm like, I see something, like, that they post, and I'm like, should I message them? Even though, like, I want to, like, be like, oh, like, that's so cool or whatever. Just, like, chat with them. But I'm like, we don't, I get it. Yeah. I'm like, it's,
yeah. Like, and I'm very much that person, like, in my mind, like, this is delusional thinking, but in my mind, if I've been mutuals with someone for a year, like, that's my friend. Like, that's my homegirl, like, right there.
Oh, whatever. No, I get it. People, I'm the same way. I'm like, I'll talk to people, be like, yeah, my friend. And I'm like, we barely talk, but we're mutuals. We like each other's videos. We comment. That's my friend.
Yeah, no, for real. And I like and comment like all on like everything of yours that I see. And I was like, she's like, she's probably like, who the hell is this? Like, whatever. But like, no, I am very good at overthinking. That's like on my like LinkedIn application.
Yeah. I should put that on there. I get that. Super major overthinker.
Well, Harley, before we get into the thick of the interview, would you mind just introducing yourself to the audience and giving us like a little bit of a brief background about you?
Yeah, so I'm Harley. I am currently a first year physician assistant student. I studied public health in undergrad, took a couple years off to get clinical hours as part of the PA application. And now I'm actually getting ready to finish up my first year and head into the clinical side of the PA program. And then I start working, which is pretty intimidating. The idea that I'll be a full-on healthcare provider, which, I mean, I've wanted to go into medicine, I think, since I don't even know how far back, since I was a little kid. Originally thought medical school, and then ended up discovering the physician assistant profession, which is slowly changing to physician associate, but I'll end up using probably physician assistant throughout when I'm talking about it, just because that's still what most people will call it right now. And I decided that in high school, I realized it was really more of what I wanted to do within healthcare. And so the idea that something that I've been working on for 10 years or so now is pretty close to reality is kind of crazy.
Yeah. Oh, well, first of all, congratulations on getting so far. Like, I know that's no easy feat by any means. And
no.
And to do it like really so young, like you're very, I feel like you're very young in healthcare fields.
Yeah, because I'll be, when I graduate from school, I'll still be 25 because I have a summer birthday. And I will say for the PA profession, I feel like the average age, I think, of students is somewhere in like late 20s, typically like 26, 27 is usually the average age of a PA student. But at least in my program, I feel like, and maybe it's just that my specific year, I feel like we have a younger class, but overall it is. And I mean, I still feel like I'm too young almost to be doing this. I'm like, I'm not old enough to be a full adult and be responsible for patients. And it's like, I know there are people my age who are doing it. And like, but I think also, you know, you see doctors who go through a residency. So by the time that they're a full-on doctor, they're usually a little bit older. But as a PA, if you start, I mean, there's people in my class, I think, who went straight in from undergrad. Most people take some time off, but some people do go straight in. So like, they're 22, and I definitely can't imagine myself having done it at 22 years old. Mm-hmm. I still feel too young at 24.
Yeah. The side note, as a fellow summer birthday, robbed in school, just straight up robbed in school. Like, I felt so, I don't know, like, did you ever, maybe this is just me, and like, maybe I just had issues, I don't know, two are not mutually exclusive, but did you ever get like jealous of like the people who like got to celebrate their birthday in school and everyone told them happy birthday?
Absolutely. I was always so jealous. And this was actually the first year of my life. Well, I guess last year, where I actually had school on my birthday, because we started, our program starts in May, and then it's, you have a summer semester. And then, so first year is three semesters, second year is three semesters. So I actually was in school on my birthday this year, 'cause it was a weekday. I'd never had that before. Granted, I think it would have been more fun in like elementary school that you get to celebrate your birthday at school rather than PA school, where you're in a day of eight, from 8 to 5 of lectures, rather than like, oh, you get to bring in like treats for all your friends and have like a little party at school. So yeah, I get that. I always was jealous that I didn't get to celebrate my birthday at school with all my friends.
I don't know what the cutoff was for yours, but like mine was like May 27th. So it's like right at the Memorial Day weekend. So like, even if like by chance we did go that late, like 9 times out of 10, when it did go over, it was on Memorial Day, or we had the day off for Memorial Day. So I was like, I was robbed again. And now
for us ended in like beginning of June, like usually June 10th. So I'm a July birthday. So I like was never close to even.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I almost feel like that was better, because to me, I was like holding on hope. It's like, you know, maybe if we'd have like a couple snow days here, you know, just like keeping my hope up, and then just never came through. I mean, I will say that my mom and dad always, and I didn't know what day my birthday was until like I was in third grade, because my mom and dad, and they really ate with this. I really love them for this.
Yeah.
Since my mom worked at the school, like she would just let me bring stuff in on like the last, like near the last day of school, and to just be like, that's your birthday this year, like for this, like let them do it. So like,
sweet.
But like in my head, I knew it wasn't my actual birthday, so like it didn't feel real. So like,
I get that. It's like when you don't celebrate on your birthday, like you do something in advance or something after, and you're like, okay, well, like I know it's for my birthday, but it's not the day of. And like, I think some people don't care about, like some people see it as they're like, oh, it's just another day, but like I'm always a big birthday person, so
me,
I'm like,
too. Me too. Yeah,
it no feels more special to do it on the day.
Yeah, like I'm that friend that sends like for like not random blow Joe, I mean like I still like leave people comments like happy birthday on Facebook, like I'm still that dude, but like my close friends, I'm like sending the text like right at midnight, like once it starts, like,
oh yeah. I'm like the person who like will try, like my really close friends, I'm like, I want to be one of the first people to call them or message them. Like I really try to like remember and like watch the time and be like, I'm going to be one of the first to wish you a happy birthday.
Yeah. I think it's us summer birthdays. Like we know what it's like to like not have, and we like go hard for like a.
And also, like you see people in person at school, like you see people in person at school and then you hear someone else say happy birthday and you're like, oh, it's your birthday. Like, happy birthday. But in the summer, it's like people have to remember or like see it online.
Yeah. I'm that type of person to where like, I don't want it to feel fake. So like, if I hear someone else say someone happy birthday, I'll pretend I didn't hear and like wait. And then later on the day, then I'll say it like alone. So then it doesn't feel cheapened.
And they never know.
Yeah. Cause like, even if I knew it was their birthday and someone else says it before me, I feel like it gets cheapened.
And yeah, like, I get that.
There. So like, I don't know, maybe I'm just insane, but
I feel like if it's a friend of mine, I'll maybe do that sometimes or like wait a little bit, but like just in case, I'm like, I don't want you to think like I forgot your birthday kind of deal. But if it's somebody that like I don't know super well or whatever, like I still want to say like happy birthday to them, because I'm like, it feels nice when people are, if you're a person who likes birthdays, like it feels nice when people are like, just anybody wishes you a happy birthday. So like if it's someone I don't know super well, where like I don't think they'd expect me to know their birthday, I'll say it after if I hear somebody. But like, yeah, sometimes I'll wait a little bit so that, it doesn't like cheapen it. Or like, they'll be like, did you forget? And you're only remembering it because so-and-so said it or whatever.
Yeah. I will, I will say, though, this is probably like the first year I'm not really looking forward to my birthday because I turned 25.
I also turned 25, and I don't know. I like feel a little bit weird about it because it's like, oh, quarter life crisis. But then I'm like kind of looking forward to it. I don't know. I also know I'll be on clinical rotations, and I actually have to look and see which one I'll be doing then, because it may be like, will I actually get to celebrate my birthday on my birthday? Depending, because even though I think it's a Friday, if I'm in like my surgery rotation or something, that I could be in the OR on my birthday, which I mean would be kind of cool, but like, yeah. I don't know if it'll be celebrated the same way, even though it's a big year.
Yeah. I, as a gay man, I'm really not looking forward to 25. Like,
okay, my friends told me that 30 is like your gay funeral.
Yeah, well, historically it was 25.
Okay.
And then it got moved to like 30. Like 25 is like you're past your prime already. Like you're done. And then once you hit 30, that's like decrepit. And I say this around like my gay friends. Like I was back when I was like dating in like my early 20s, like 21, 22. And it didn't work out. They're like, oh, like it'll happen. Like you'll be okay. Like, don't worry about it. Da, 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 da. Then when I turned 23, 24 and something didn't work out, they were like, are you sure you can't work it out? I mean, like, you're not getting any younger. Like, so like.
And it sucks because like 25 really isn't that old, but like it does feel like.
No, 25 is not that old. I want everyone to know who said like, oh, 30 is so old. Okay, you've been alive for 3 decades. The first two. Yeah. Your brain wasn't even fully developed. The first one, like you couldn't even go anywhere without being supervised by someone else. Like, yeah. I don't think we know what we're talking about.
I feel like I'm 24 and I'm like, I still feel kind of like a teenager, but who's like a little more independent now. Like,
that's what I said. Like, it's out here for a teenager in his mid 20s. Like, it's like exhausting.
No, the number of times I'm like, I'm just a teenage girl. Like, I'm just a 24 year old teenage girl. Like, I don't feel necessarily like an adult. And I think maybe part of that is like being still in school versus like if I were working a job, you know, kind of like, okay, yeah. Like living on my own, yes, but in school, not necessarily doing like all the adult responsibilities and things because I'm not in that situation where like I have a job and I need to like student loans are paying rent right now, not a job. And so it's like that feeling of, but then realizing, oh, I'm getting really lucky because again, with the summer birthday, I will graduate and then I won't be 26 until probably like, I'll probably have a job by the time I turn 26 and I'm no longer on my parents' insurance. Like,
I'm scared. I mean, I have insurance like through my job at the university. So
yeah.
Like I'm fine there, but like, I don't know. I like still being on my mom and dad's, be like, oh, they'll take care of it.
Yeah. I'm like that's somebody else's problem right now, but soon it won't be.
Soon it won't be. I'm like, I'm going to milk that like for all I have left of these like last 2 years before I turn 26.
Yeah. The idea of like being a real adult is
no. I was on TikTok this morning and there which by the time this airs, TikTok might be banned, so if so, RIP.
Oh god.
But this girl said the prefrontal cortex is not developed until you're 26. So therefore, any decisions I make up to then was not a final decision. That was a rough draft and should not be held against me. And honestly, she ate with that. She ate with that before.
Oh my God, I love that.
So like us early mid-20s people, like we still got some time.
I'm going with that. Any decision I make until 26 is a rough draft. Absolutely.
Yeah. No. And I think about it and be like, wow, like, and I'm going to apply that to the people I've dated. Like, you were a rough draft. Like, this is not the finalized manuscript that I put forward.
This is like me trying to figure out what's going to work and, you know, trying out different, you know,
yeah.
Things. Okay, rough draft, you know, I can make edits.
Now, like your section gone, but no, I'm kidding. Oh, notice, no. But getting back to school, you bring up like a really good point, and like I definitely want to go into that a little bit more. But as like people who are in their mid-20s and have friends like working like full time in the corporate world, like not in a academic program or anything like that. Me personally, I find it like not in a sense of like I'm still in like undergrad mode or anything like that. But I like for me, I went straight from high school to undergrad to my master's to my PhD. So like I never stopped. And people who did, like you like got some like clinical hours in before starting like back into the program. And then some people who just like completely stopped going to school, like once they got their undergrad, like or their bachelor's. Do you think like it kind of shifts your mind and like how you look at the world and how you operate? Or do you think that's not really true?
I don't know how dramatic. I think it also depends person to person. Like I definitely think from my experience, because I did do the route of, and I knew early on, like when I went to undergrad, and I had already decided, okay, I want to go to PA school after undergrad. So I need to work on getting all the requirements. And I saw, okay, so most programs you need at least 1,000 clinical hours. Some are upping it to 2,000. I think some have gone to 1,500 is like the minimum. And most people apply with more. I think when I applied, I think I had somewhere over 2,000 hours. I knew I was not at close to or just over 2,000 hours. I know I was not at like 3,000, but like some people for PA school, especially like had careers prior. So like they have thousands and thousands of hours. Whereas I just did like, I worked somewhere for the time that I was applying. But I think that for me, I knew, okay, the balance of school and trying to work to get these hours. And like, I could do it in the summer, but I was like, I just don't think that's going to work for me. And I need to take the time to focus on school and then do this. And I think that taking the time, which it was about almost 2 years by the time I actually left for school, but a year of working before I started applying, I think it, for me, it was really good to get out and just experience the world and working a little bit separate from school. But I also know everybody's different. And I know some people who came straight in, I think because my program starts kind of early, there were people who graduated and 2 weeks later they started PA school. And for some people that works. And I have friends who are like, oh, I know if I took the break to work, I would never want to go back to school. But I also know I'm the kind of person where I'm like, I know I'm working and taking this time off because I want to go back to school. Not so much I need a break from school. So I feel like the way it shapes you, I think, is different for everyone in the sense of like, what is your goal when you're stopping school or not stopping in between?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, that totally makes sense. And that's a very well thought out way to put that. Like, because I know for me, I'm the youngest in my PhD cohort. And I came.
Yeah, also, because a lot of people who are in their PhDs are usually like into their 30s and stuff, right? I could be wrong about that, but.
A lot. Now I think it's like a mixed bag, like really. Okay. But I thought the same thing. Like I thought like I was like super young, and I'm not that young, but I'm still the youngest one. So our, like my cohort, there's like seven of us. Me and a fellow 24-year-old came in at the same time. She took a couple years off to figure out what she wanted to do and then decided on PhD. I went straight bachelor's, master's, PhD. And then the rest of them are like ranging from like 27 to 31 who took some time off for world experience and then went straight to the PhD. And then, well, not straight into PhD. There's a couple who like did their master's too, but like, yeah, it's like all like very different. And yeah, so.
That's kind of how PA school is too. And I know like each year in my specific program, it varies kind of who is there. Like, we do have some, I think in my cohort, I think the oldest person is in their 30s. I don't think we have anybody in their 40s, but they have had people who are, because PA, a lot of it, I think more now, more often it is becoming like someone's first career, but it used to be a lot of people, it was a second career for them. So they had already worked a job as a paramedic, or we get a lot of people who were like military medics and things like that. Because that's originally how the program was designed. The profession of PA originally was for people who had some form of military medic experience, and it was a fast track into medicine. That's how it started at Duke. And so originally it was that secondary or that second career. So people were older, but now it's really a mixed bag, and it is starting to get younger and younger as people are discovering the profession earlier when they're deciding the path of medicine and then going straight from undergrad.
Yeah. And I have to say, like, I think we finished around the same time, because when did you graduate college? I graduated in 2021.
So did I, yeah.
Okay. So that's what I thought. And like, even then, like, there was a lot of people who, and me as well, I went to undergrad thinking I'm going to go to medical school, which I feel like is a very common trend on this show. It's like people who like wanted to, who started out wanting to go into med school and then just decided no. But like, from there, like, a lot of people, even like from day one, stepped in. They're like, yeah, I want to go to PA school, like all this. So like, I definitely feel like this, like, not necessarily its popularity, but like its recognition as a career is like growing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think even not, I'm definitely not going to say like everybody, because I don't know everyone in my program's like story of how they figured out they wanted to go to PA school. But I feel like at least from quite a number of the people I know, and from what I've heard from them, it was not necessarily like, and most people, it's not like I don't want to go to med school, so I guess I'll do this instead. It's more so like you learned about the profession and find, oh, I think this actually is more in line with what I want to do within medicine, which was the case for me. But a lot of people I know didn't learn about the profession until they got to college. I decided, I want to say it was either my freshman or sophomore year of high school, I had kind of been down the path. I had gone back and forth with a couple different things I wanted to do within health. Like, when I was really little, I wanted to be a veterinarian. So like, that's not even people medicine. But then, you know, for a long time, it was like, oh, I'm going to be a doctor, I'm going to go to med school. And when I was in high school, I started talking more seriously about it. I was like very much the kid who sophomore year was already like, I need to make a list of all the schools we're going to go tour in junior year, like already like very focused on college. And my parents were like, okay. But then they're like, you know, my parents and I, of course, was like, I'm not going to listen to like what you're saying. I can have all the balance. But they're like, we don't think the balance you want in life is going to align with medical school. You don't, like, you may not realize that, but like, it's not necessarily like, they're like, you know, you want, or have talked about like, you want to have like a family one day. And that's still true. And like, you know, all these different things you want to do in life. And they're like, we don't think you realize like how long med school is going to be. And also like, I'm not like not a competitive person, but I'm not like the most competitive. I'm like competitive with myself, but not with other people. And they're like, med school is very competitive with other people. And like, you're just not that kind of person. Like, they're like, we don't think med school is maybe the path for you, but like, we obviously know you want to go into healthcare. My mom was like, have you ever considered PA? A big thing also was, I really want to spend that time with the patients that doctors don't always get, especially in certain specialties that I've considered. And so they're like, we think like this is going to allow you to spend more time with patients. It's more of a collaborative profession, because you work with a healthcare team rather than this idea of being like a solo practitioner. And so I went and shadowed, I think my mom was seeing like a PA as her in family medicine at the time, instead of like a primary care doctor. And so she was like, why don't you come with me to an appointment that she had coming up? She was like, chat with her, hear more about the profession. And then I shouted her a couple times and I was like, okay, no, this is what I want to do. Like, this is the time I want with patients, the just more of that patient interaction. And then, you know, at that time I was like, I definitely, I think before that, had thought about surgery, but also like sophomore year, I started watching Grey's Anatomy and was like, oh my God, that seems so cool. Like within medicine, like, you know, 15. And my mom was like, you know, when you're the surgeon, like you're not necessarily spending all that time with the patients, like as much as you think you are, because you see it on Grey's Anatomy. And so I also talked to a couple surgical PAs and heard about like what they do as far as like pre-op and the post-op. And I was like, yeah, no, I want to be like sitting there chatting, like talking to the patients, like providing them. I was like, that's what I want to do. So I was like, okay, like, I think this is more the route I want to go. Maybe this isn't the specialty I'm going to end up in, but I just loved the idea of being a PA. I mean, the shorter course of schooling also was a nice little bonus, but overall I was like, okay, I think this is more in line with what I want to do in my career.
That's honestly, I don't know exactly how to word this, but that's such a, like, that sounds like such a healthy, like, discussion, like discussions and conversations you've had with like your parents, like trying to figure out like what you want. And I just know for me, like,
I'll say they weren't always all, because there's definitely a lot of teenager, like, you don't know what you're talking about. I can have all of that balance in life. You don't know. I could be different. There absolutely were times like that where I'm like, you just don't want me to do what I want to do. But in fact, they did have my best interest, and yes, they were right. But like,
you know, you can't say that out. You can't say that out loud. That they'll never let you live it down. They'll never let like, I know. I know for me, because I also started watching Grey's Anatomy around when I was like 14, 15.
Yeah.
Got super into it. I annoyed the hell out of all my friends like in high school. And I really fell in love with it. I have my own like opinions on the series. I mean, I made TikToks about it.
Yeah.
And really built a following from it, which not a huge following, but like a little enough to like to be involved in like the community of like what was going on.
Oh, 2020 was such a time for Grey's Anatomy TikTok. 2020 to 2021.
I feel like it was peak Grey's TikTok, honestly.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, I still like all your stuff that you do with it on TikTok, which if y'all aren't following Harley, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, I'm convinced that you could, I feel like you could write a finale of addressing all the plot holes in Grey's, like, and do it well.
Thank you. I'm not the best writer, but maybe I get a writing staff. They let me into the writer's room. I tell them what I think should happen, and then they put it into a script.
You know, just, you know, Grey's Anatomy, anyone in the writer's room is listening, bring Harley in, and you know, I don't even need to do anything. I won't even talk. Just let me sit in the corner. Like, I'll turn in all my phones, like recording devices. Just let me sit in the corner so I can say I've been there.
I think it's such a cool job that they have like people who are the medical consultants even. I'm like, okay, maybe if I like got really burnt out in whatever specialty I was doing and needed a break, like that'd be kind of a fun little like side adventure, a little side quest to go do. You're still doing medicine, but in a very different way.
You know, full-time PA and then moonlight as a medical consultant on
Grey's Anatomy.
By the time I was this is a little telling on my age, but by the time I was a senior in college, I was like a peer mentor to like other undergrads. Yeah. And I had already taken the MCAT at this point. That was
something I was so glad I didn't have to do.
Girl, it took part of my soul. I'm still trying to get her back. Like,
I saw my friends study for that.
No, and it was for nothing because I didn't get in anywhere. But like, you know, I'll work down the end. But people come in and be like, well, I really like Grey's Anatomy and then I want to do this. I was like, babes, no. Like, I had shadowed surgeons, podiatrists, general practitioners. Yeah. Like, everything and be like, babes, no one's hooking up in a supply closet at a hospital, for God's sake. this is not like, and
no. Listen, there's hospital drama still from what I've heard.
There's hospital drama, but like not.
It's not Grey's Anatomy.
It's not Grey's Anatomy. And like this poor girl, like she really thought like. She, because like one of the assignments was like, oh, like describe your career, like cite your sources about like people's experience and everything.
Yeah.
And she cited to be like, the average surgeon only works like an hour a week. And she cited Grey's Anatomy as like the thing.
Oh, no.
I was like, babe, no.
Grey's Anatomy, I feel like, doesn't show it that way. They show them living in the hospital.
I know. Like, I was like, first of all, what season are you watching? Like, the pilot episode, they work at 48 as their first day. Like,
yeah. Which I don't think is quite allowed anymore. But at this, allowed versus what happens, I think is a little bit.
That is the question. Is it?
Yeah.
Allowed, or is it what happens?
I mean, we've been told in my program, because obviously like we're getting ready to start clinical year, so we've had like info sessions, and we were told that our clinical rotations each week, it could range anywhere from working 32 hours a week to 80, which like I think 80 is probably, you know, kind of from what I've heard from students who are in clinical year, they're like, obviously that's more things like surgery, and like where you could, it's more of a situation where like you just get caught in a long surgery, not like you're absolutely your entire surgical rotation going to be working 80 hours a week. It's more so like wiggle room for things come up, but 80 hours a week could happen.
Like, yeah.
1 hour a week.
No. And I was like, girl, please tell me this was a joke. Please tell me you were not being serious. She was.
You live and you learn.
Yeah. Got accepted to medical school somehow though.
Good for her. Maybe you were a stepping stone on the way to figuring out like, hey, I actually hadn't done all the research I needed to learn about the career. And now I need to go learn a little more. And from that, she still found out that that was what she wanted to do. So, I mean, that's good.
Yeah. No, like, rune for your girl. I won't name her on this show because I don't embarrass her. But like, I'm hoping like the plot is like, I hope the plot is plotting. So.
Yeah.
No, but like as someone who's like in the healthcare field and appreciate shows like Grey's Anatomy, do you ever get annoyed like when they get like some things wrong? Or
so I haven't, like, since starting PA school, I honestly have barely gotten to rewatch any of Grey's Anatomy. I've barely gotten to watch TV. I just got into The Bachelor this year because I was mindless television. Like, I tried to watch an episode of Grey's Anatomy, I think a few weeks ago, and maybe I got through two episodes and was like, it's just like a lot going on in the show, and I love it so much. I've watched it so many times. You would think even like rewatching it now wouldn't, it could be mindless, but I'm like trying to also pay attention. And I feel like I haven't rewatched enough to catch the medical mistakes, but obviously like prior to this, I knew some of them, and I'm like less than like annoyed, more so like it's funny. To look at some of the things.
Yeah.
Like, I watched it back, I think this was last year before I'd gone to school, with one of my friends who's a nurse. And so she was pointing out the things, and like, we're laughing about it because we're like, it's so funny that like sometimes seeing on medical shows, like the way they'll stick electrodes on for an EKG, where they'll place them, or like, I'm like, what? Like, that would pick up absolutely nothing. Like, Grey's Anatomy in the later seasons is much better because they have those medical consultants. But like in the early seasons, it is funny to see like the little mess ups and stuff. Like, I just find it hilarious.
I feel this is going to sound bad, but like as someone who I know very little like medical knowledge, but like I know a little bit.
Yeah.
Going back and like watching the earlier seasons, which I just gone back into because like with school and like moving, like in the last year I've lived in three different states, so like a lot going on at the moment. So I've just gone back into rewatching, and I'm rewatching season one right now, and like, girl, like it was so unhinged, but like it was so good. And like I will say though, I think peak Grey's Anatomy is like seasons like 7 through 11.
I would include 6 personally, but like, yes, like that is the golden era of Grey's Anatomy, 100%.
Oh yeah, no. Did I say 7? I meant 6. Season 6.
But yeah, that area of like 6-7 to like season 11. But also when you realize that season 11 is the last time Shonda Rhimes wrote anything for Grey's Anatomy, you're like, okay, I kind of get where the change happened. I do love season 14 though, because I love Joe and Alex, but you know, we're going to forget about what happened.
Joe deserved the world. Joe can do no wrong in my eyes.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah. And I could talk about that ending forever.
We could have a whole separate thing on Grey's Anatomy.
That's a whole separate show.
But it is funny to watch back some of the medical stuff. I think more than anything, if I'm going to say something that annoys me, it's like seeing like Grey's Anatomy specifically. It's like the surgeons do not do all of this other specialty, like seeing them do stuff of other specialties more than just like, oh, this is a lot that a surgeon wouldn't do. I'm like, the surgeons don't, like Owen Hunt, why is he running the ER? Like, yes, he's a trauma surgeon, but like an ER doctor would run the ER. Like,
yeah. And I don't know. Like, to me, the way that they painted everything, be like, how is Meredith Grey having time to research, give talks, run an ER as well, train, have a full week of surgeries, and be a mom? It's like, while dating someone from Wisconsin, like what's going, like what are we going on here? I feel like we have several plots going on in parallel but similar universes. Like, what's going on?
Time doesn't exist the same way.
no, it does not. But like, I think it's funny, and I felt out of love with the show for a while, but I'm falling back in love with it again. So that's very discover.
It comes back tonight, and I haven't even, like, normally I'll go rewatch like the last couple episodes, and I haven't. And I think I'm trying to go in with zero expectation. I think I actually made a video earlier today where I was like, here's some like funny predictions I think would like could happen, but or like not even funny, but I'm just like, you know, like when people make like the bingo cards for the year, just like anything could happen at this point. But I'm like, I don't expect any of this to happen. And I'm like, maybe if I lower expectations, I'll enjoy it more rather than like theorizing what's going to happen. But that's also the Swiftie in me, so like, you know.
The people who are in the Grey's fandom and are Swifties need to be studied, because the way we will grasp on to even the slightest,
everything's an easter egg,
everything that's a double meaning, everything's an advertisement for something else, everything calls back to everything else. Like, I saw one TikTok today, which I don't think I reposted, but I should have, because like it refreshed before I could do it. And I was I hate when that happens. But this girl was saying that like 5 reasons why Lexi Gray's not really dead. And like, it was like going like, I was like, we saw her die.
The Derek Shepherd one, listen, because I know I've played into it, but I think also people don't realize when I'm joking, and I get that. Like, you can't always like, even in videos, like people don't know you, so they can't always pick up on your sarcasm or when you're joking, whatever. But like, I have made the joke for a long time that like, oh, Derek Shepherd pulled like a Bart Bass. Like, have you ever watched Gossip Girl? And first of all, I said that one time and people were like, you spoiled Gossip Girl. I'm like, it has been off the air since 2012.
No,
I can't help you there.
Here's my thing. If the show has been off the air for...
I'll be conservative, 2022, so a decade.
Yeah, if the show has been off for 3 years, and keep in mind it was popular, so it was already on streaming services. Like, that's on you, babes. That is on you. Like, it was, like, it's not like this niche show that like no one knew, that only you and your friends knew about, and your friends decided to spoil it for you. It's not like this was just a brand new series.
Okay.
I get upset with spoilers for like Drag Race, for example, because the second those shows air, those bitches like everything.
Like, and it just aired. And that's why, like with Grey's, when I would post like reaction videos, I tried to like put the episode number over the front or like give a little bit of warning before I said something that was a spoiler, whatever, because like I get that. That makes sense. Like, I'd be annoyed too.
Yeah. Like that, if you post like spoilers like the day, like the second it happens, like, yeah, I would get being upset. But like, a show that's been off the air for 10 years in after the pandemic, babes, you were not going to watch that. You were not going to watch that. Don't do that. Don't do that right now.
That's even like, I think one time, maybe like last year, I said something about like George dying and people were like, I just started the show. You spoiled that for me. And I'm like, that happened almost 20 years ago.
George died before the first iPhone. Like,
oh my God.
Like what the hell do you mean you spoiled it? The what? Of my girl.
Looking at the timeline of things is crazy. Thinking about the fact that he died for the first iPhone.
Okay, I think that's correct. Hold on. I need to look up because like
it was season 5. If the show started in season 5. No, I think the iPhone might have been out, but it would have been like the early days, right? Because the iPhone came out, what, in 2008? 2007. Oh, okay. So he would have still been alive, but like barely. Like it was not long after. Like iPhones were in their early days.
Okay, yeah. So like, yeah. So he died in season 6. That was 2009.
Oh yeah, because I guess it was end of season 5, beginning of season 6. He technically was when he died.
Yeah. So George died in the era of the first iPhone.
Yeah.
And we're on iPhone 15. So
what do you want from me when I say that? Oh, George O'Malley died, and people are like, "What?"
George died before gay marriage was legal.
Yeah.
So. Like, I respectfully, I do not care
about that. Can't be a spoiler anymore.
Can't be a spoiler anymore. Like, it's not, that's not a spoiler. That's just.
Yeah. No, you want to talk about a spoiler? And I made a video about this the other day, and I know we are so off topic right now. Well, but
don't worry. We come back to this. Like, you've heard the show. Like, we talk, and then we bring it back. You know, it's like a great episode. We start out great. We get lost around in the middle, and then we bring it all back.
We get to develop the characters just a little bit. We started our storyline.
Yeah, we started. Yeah, you know, we might kill her off. We don't know. Like, we'll tease it for 5 seasons. We'll almost do it like 3 times, but then the last second we'll bring her back and like just to keep it going.
We told you Meredith Grey was leaving, and she'd pop in from time to time. But in a 10 episode season so far, she's confirmed for 4. Alan Pompeo is never getting away from that show.
I promise, like a side tangent to the side tangent to the side tangent. This is going to be a hot take, but like at one point we just got to end. Like we got to stop calling it Grey's Anatomy. Just make it a spinoff. I mean, good Lord. I mean, like we have like a Station 19 crossover every other week almost. Like, let's just. You know, this is a hot take, and like I have nothing to base this in other than like just cast, social media, and everything. I don't think anyone wants to be like the focal character of the show. So I think that's why
they want to try and replace Meredith.
Yeah, no. Nope. Yeah, I would too. I mean, like, yeah. I don't think you can. I don't think anyone can follow up that role.
No, no one can replace her. I don't think anyone wants to be number one on the call sheet. I think they're like, I would be afraid to. First of all, your character's going to go through every different life or death experience once a season. But I mean, I guess that's fun for you as an actor. But I just think in general, like she is such an iconic role that no one can fill that spot. And like I said before, I'm like Grey's Anatomy can continue without Meredith Grey in the sense that like you could rebrand the show into a spinoff or something. But like, and it can continue with those characters, but you can't have one focal character out of all the characters that there are. Like,
no.
That was Meredith Grey.
Not now. Like, if this would have happened in like season like 9 or whatever, I could maybe see it. But I feel like it's getting to be like a soap opera where like they reference characters so much that
I am excited for Arizona Robbins to come back though.
I'm real hyped for her to come back. I love her. I also love Callie Torres, and I I don't know. Like, I love Arizona to come back. I feel like there was still so much that they could do with their character.
You know, and I think it's only going to be one episode, so I'm hoping it ends up being more. But as of right now, they've only confirmed one episode. It's a whole thing.
What should be like the season finale or something like that?
I think Jessica Capshaw posted on her Instagram that she's back April 4th, and I don't think the finale will be till May. So oh. I don't think so.
I couldn't remember the date on like.
I think because I just looked today. I think it's sometime in April, and I think it's April 4th that she's coming back.
Yeah, but.
I could be wrong, but. Yeah. Oh, but the whole spoiler thing. If you want to talk about like a real spoiler for Grey's Anatomy, it was walking into, and I hadn't started actually watching Grey's Anatomy yet. I started watching it right after. The day after Derek Shepherd died, walking into school. On that day, everybody was talking about it. You couldn't avoid
that. No. Like, arguably.
People who couldn't watch TV on a weekday because your like parents didn't, like, whatever. Like, you found out. You knew.
You found out. You didn't even have to F around. You've just found out.
Oh. Some people found out because of McDonald's.
That was actually crazy. That was actually crazy.
That was foul.
Low-key funny, like, oh my gosh. Harley, you might want to explain that to, like, our audience members.
So McDonald's had tweeted, and I didn't actually know about this at the time because, like, I wasn't very active on Twitter in high school, but I found it later on, where McDonald's, the day that Derek Shepherd, or maybe they tweeted the next day, but after Derek Shepherd died, they made a tweet that said, like, Hold on, let me pull it up. I think I just made a TikTok talking about this recently because I was like, oh, it's like almost a decade. Like, this year's 9 years since Derek Shepherd died. Here it is. It's McChicken with a check mark, McFlurry with a check mark, and then it says McDreamy dot 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 sad face, RIP McDreamy.
I forgot the McChicken. That was amazing.
Yeah. It's
That was like, imagine you're not allowed, like, imagine like you're like out of the house that day and you can't watch it and you just get on your phone for social media and then you get spoiled by fucking McDonald's like that.
Yeah. Like, I think it was already known he was leaving the show, but obviously nobody knew what was going to happen. But also, like, I get it when Shonda Rhimes is like, the only two options were to have him leave Meredith and his kids. Or to kill him off, like,
yeah, and like, there was really no way to do that because, like, if he was like a single doctor with no kids,
right?
And like, yeah, because I was trying to think of like who that blonde woman was that Callie was with that wanted to snitch on Stevens for
Erica Hahn,
yes, like Erica Hahn, she had no. Like, she was dating Callie. She had no, like, real ties to the show. So, like, she could just leave. Like, it was nothing. So, like, that I get. Like, that kind of, I get. But, yeah. I mean, like, obviously, I don't know.
I don't see a better solution. But then, apparently, on, you know, because they're like, oh, I think literally the only reason he couldn't leave Meredith was they were like, he was too good of a father to have that be his ending, where he just leaves Meredith and their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had no problem having Alex leave Joe.
True.
Which, still to this day, I will die on the hill that was the worst ending for a character and a slap in the face to his character development. But
literally the only character they consistently, like, really developed, like,
yeah,
like, really. And then threw it all away from, like, a last-second plot.
Right. And I get that Justin Chambers didn't want to come back. He was going through a lot. Like, so I get that they were in kind of a tough spot, but that didn't have to be the ending.
No. I mean, like, they even talked about, like, his, like, mom and his brother, like, was not doing well.
Yeah.
So he could have been that. Like, they literally could be like, I don't know how long I'm going to be here, and I can't
like,
be
fair to you and something like that.
Yeah, I can't be the husband that you need me to be. Like, granted, like, there's really no good way to write that out.
No.
With like honestly, like, this is a hot take, but like, killing him off would have made more sense narrative wise.
Did you ever watch Private Practice?
Yeah.
Okay, with Pete, the way that they didn't actually see his death. He had a heart attack while running in the canyon or whatever, and then they found him.
Yeah.
It could have been something like that, where like, he wasn't going to come back. They could have said that he was whatever. But like, the idea that people, like, I've seen people argue that are like, but it is his character development, because like, he's going to be like the dad that he never had for his kids. And I'm like, but in the process of that, he lied to Joe, basically their whole relationship, because they both obviously had a lot of insecurities, but like, she was so insecure about the idea of like, no one's going to want to stay with me. She gave him so many outs. He said, I'm not leaving. He literally said when that fake Izzy was there in season four, or like the, you know, the lookalike in season 14, where she was like, she gave him the biggest out of, you should call her if you want to know how she's doing. And he said, I don't need to do that. I don't need to know how she's doing.
Yeah. And she even said that like, she has her eggs fertilized with your, like, that's your kids. Like, call her up. Like, I don't want you to get a call saying that she had him and then you leave. Like, if you want to do that, do it now. She specifically gave him out for that exact reason and then left.
Yeah. Literally, honestly, the ending, and I've said this before, it felt like the writers went and typed it into Wattpad fan fiction, Joe, Alex, Izzy, and saw what someone had written on like AO3 or Wattpad and been like, that's the one. Because people have written stories like that.
Yes. Yes.
People wrote stories like that way before, after the whole thing with the fertilized eggs. Because I remember, because I was 15 years old watching this, and I was like, ooh, Wattpad, like little Grey's Anatomy stories. And I saw that. I'm like, that's ridiculous. That would never happen. You all need to stop that. I was like, somebody somewhere was like, oh my God, I called it. Somebody out there. And for them, but it sucks for the rest of us.
Yeah. They're like, wow, I really,
good on you for predicting it. A like, whole storyline. I think you should call them up about copyright, because they just stole that from you.
They completely I swear though, this fandom like will get behind any other storyline besides what the writers wrote. Like, I remember like one of my most viral TikToks I ever had was like my theory about how Grey's Anatomy should end.
Yeah.
And then like the amount of people be like, I sent this to Shonda. I was like, Shonda doesn't write for this fucking show anymore. Like, she does not give a shit. Like,
my favorite thing is telling people stuff like saying something like that online, like, oh yeah, Shonda hasn't written in forever. And they're like, that's not true. You're wrong. And I'm like, look up interviews.
Google is free.
Like, in this case, like, no, that's wrong. Like, she hasn't been, or when people are like, I can't believe Shonda would do that, I'm like, she hasn't been here since season 11.
Like, get mad at anyone else but her. Like, she literally, publicly said, I'm done.
She said, executive producer, my name's on it, that's it.
Yeah. Which, you know, like, I mean, like, homegirl's like got everything going. Like, I mean, like, at one point she was, I think, if I have my timelines correctly, she was simultaneously writing for How to Get Away with Murder, Scandal, and Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, because TGIT.
Yeah, like,
oh, I miss TGIT.
TGIT, you just had to be there. That's my, you had to be there, like, trend.
When they did the promo for, it was season 14, and they were using Look What You Made Me Do for, like,
oh, yeah.
TGIT. Oh, what a time to be alive.
That ate. I'm so excited for Rep TV.
Oh, I don't think it's coming as soon as people think it is. I think she's going to, my guess, and I follow some of those, like, pop insider pages that, like, have been pretty accurate. So like, I do think they have accurate sources, and they even, like, one of them on Twitter I've seen goes as far as to like update when like information they have, they're like, hey, this has changed. Mm-hmm. Like, they even say when things have changed, like, they don't hold on to a date, and everything has said, and like, I do believe this is like May, June announcement, which makes sense because she's back on tour, with a September release.
See, to me, that makes sense. And then I think the end of the U.S. leg of the tour, like in like this year, is when she's going to announce debut TV. Like,
I think so. I think I kind of think, I mean, her birthday is a Friday the 13th. Like, I feel like she could do a birthday release of debut.
Yeah, I think debut TV might have the biggest vault track of them all.
I hope so. I hope I'd Lie is on there.
What?
I hope I'd Lie and like Beautiful Eyes and like those are all there.
Same. I hope, because we saw this like songs that she's written but like not recorded, like on Red TV. And yeah. From the Hannah Montana movie, You Always Find Your Way Back Home.
I know. My cousin and I just watched the Hannah Montana movie the other night and we were like, It would, like, I really hope she re-records Crazier, even if she did it as like a situation how like she released like the Hunger Games songs and stuff like separately, but then they were like considered part of Red. Like, yeah. I hope she re-records Crazier, and You'll Always Find Your Way Back Home would be such a cute way and such like a emotional way to wrap up the re-recordings. Like,
I don't know what I'm gonna do when there's like no re-recordings to like clown over, like when they're coming or like which one's next.
Clown over the next new album. She really caught everyone off guard with that. Like, I did not think
she had her
album in the middle of tour.
If I had a nickel for every award show where I thought Taylor was going to announce Reputation TV, but instead announced a new album, I would have.
Because at the VMAs, she was wearing a dress that literally looked like the bathtub of Look What You Made Me Do, like with all the diamonds. So everyone's like, what if? And then she's like, nope, new album.
No. She, and I don't know if you were on that side of TikTok, but on the Eras tour, like in the surprise song, she's like, you know, I've been like doing like the re-records and I've been retouching my old work. And it just really like made me feel like a little delicate about like some things. And then everyone heard Delicate, and then crowd started chanting Reputation, Reputation.
Oh yeah, I saw that. And then she started doing.
And then she said,
better than revenge.
Better than revenge. I was like, the nerve, the gall, the audacity.
No, it was so funny too, because obviously the movie comes out tonight on Disney Plus with like the extended version, and she's been releasing a clip of each surprise song. And like my friends and I are laughing because we're like, this is not for us. This is not new news. We've been watching the live streams. We know which nights were recorded. We knew which surprise songs it was going to be. This is for people who, not everybody follows along with her this closely.
Yeah, no, because like to me, like when I saw those announcements, I was like, this is not news. Like, this is not news to me. And then I was just like, wow, maybe like, I'm in there. And like in my lab, I have this undergrad, Lexi. Lexi, shout out. You don't listen to the show, but on the off chance. she, like when we were going to know her, she's like, I like Taylor Swift. Like, I'm a Swiftie, but like I'm not a full-blown Swiftie. And like everyone else in the lab knew me at the time. Yeah. And like knew how obsessed I was with her. I was like, yeah, same. Me too. And then my friend Serena, she goes, don't lie to the girl. Don't lie. Like, let's not do this right now. And it like fully clocked me. And I was just like, wow, like, you know.
Oh, no, the best. Oh, I've got a good story about that, because everybody in my program pretty much knows, like, there are other people who I think I have a friend who's a Swiftie in my program. And like, there are other people who are, but like, I don't think on the level that I am, or they're not vocal about it like I am. Cause I'm just like, I don't care. Like, this is something I enjoy. I'm not going to like hide that. And we had a guest lecturer come in, and I was like, I love you. You're my new favorite person. I cannot for the life of me remember exactly what the lecture was on at this point, but it was like they used Taylor as the example, like patient for management. And at one point she said something about, let's say she's however many years old. And she's like, how old is she? She's like, and I just like, I'm rattling off her age. And then she's like, and her height. And I'm like, 5'11", like, I'm like, and everybody's like giggling because like I was able to answer the question. They're like, of course Hartley can answer that question. I'm like, yeah, like 34, 5'11", like
December 13th, 1989.
I'm like, sorry, like I can say it. It's fine.
Fine.
I'm not embarrassed. Everybody else, don't act like some of you don't also know.
No. Oh, no, that's funny.
Yeah.
But shifting back from our many side tangents to... I'm so sorry, Harley and everyone. That's just how my brain works. Like,
I get it. My ADHD brain is many a tangent.
Oh yeah, actually, new question. Just got on that. Like, as like a neurodivergent person in healthcare, like, do you feel like you have how does that work? Like, do you I don't know. Like, do you notice like a difference? Like, obviously, like healthcare is like demanding as like a program and study and a practice. Of course, like I want to get that very clear. I hope that does not get misconstrued. I'm not saying that it's by any means, but like, did you kind of like have to adjust like your studying habits like even more than like your peers?
So it's hard for me to tell because one, I feel like I'm finding out more and more. And I think also it's just in general, one, the PA profession is very female dominated. And two, a lot of females in their 20s are now getting diagnosed with things like ADHD. And that was the situation I was in. I didn't get diagnosed until I was 22. So it's been almost 2 years. And so I feel personally like, I mean, I know a couple of my other classmates have talked about like either thinking they have ADHD or they are diagnosed with whatever. And I feel like I don't necessarily feel like I had to change my study habits in a different way from my classmates, because I find that my classmates and I, we all have different ways of studying that work for us. Mm-hmm. Like everybody I know seems to have a different method of studying, or like, even if we use similar tools, like I'm a huge Quizlet person. Shout out to Quizlet. You're getting me through school.
We love Quizlet in this house.
I know I'm a person where like, if I'm just reading a slide, I'm going to start to zone out and maybe I'll read a little bit, or I'm reading the words, but I'm not processing it. And then I have friends who like, they have to make their own study guide. They can't use anybody else's. So like, even the idea of Quizlet, they're like, if I'm going to use it, it has to be mine that I made. Like, meanwhile, like I have classmates who make ones and share it with the whole class. And like, I tend to use those because I'm a person who, because I tend to like, specifically with sitting down to do work, because when I'm in class, like I'm focused, like, but typing things out, I can very easily kind of like zone out and just type and not, especially when it's a long task like that. And then I'm not studying. Cause like some people it's like, making the study guide is them studying, but that just doesn't work for my brain. So I feel like every single person I know in my program has a different method of studying, like what works for them, what makes them zone out, what like doesn't work at all kind of deal. So I feel like it's definitely been a new challenge for me, but almost because I went for so long not knowing I had ADHD, like I obviously found ways throughout my entire schooling to cope. I mean, they actually, my parents and I talked about this a while back, and like, I know we're getting personal here, but it's fine. I'm fine to share the story. In that when I was really little, my parents thought I might have ADHD, and they tried to get me evaluated, and they said, she's doing too well in school. She couldn't have it, because I was a kid who was pretty much always like straight A's or like A's and B's. So they were like, you couldn't have ADHD, even if I had, first of all, it presents differently in women and girls. But even with that, they still like a lot of times look at like, oh, are you getting distracted in school to the point that you're not doing well, whatever. And it's like, but school was just something that kind of came naturally to me. So that wasn't a factor in it. So I never really, even in college, like, you know, I never had accommodations or anything. And like, I did for a little bit at the end of college when I think, cause it was like right at the end that I got diagnosed, and I did get like a little bit extra time on tests and stuff. And I was like, but actually I don't necessarily feel like I need it in every subject or anything, because like I've gone so long functioning like this that I've done okay. And it's like, yeah, the extras are nice and I appreciate that. And I think it's great when it's needed, but I guess I coped for so long that I was like, okay, I kind of have navigated the world. And now I have some extra tools that help me where I don't necessarily need like accommodations for tests and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, I mean, it's been interesting figuring it out, but I think also, yeah, just with medicine, I had to change my studying in general from what I was used to.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, as someone who's not neurotypical and had to like, didn't know that for a very long time and like had to like put more work into, and I say this like I had like A's and B's through like school, so like it wasn't like oh like he's failing this, like let's like what's going on here. I just like imagine this would be how like this was for me. Like, was it like validating in a way to like get this diagnosis, or like
absolutely, because there were things that I just didn't realize weren't things that everybody went through, like especially with like executive functioning and like I forget what it exactly is. I think I want to say like object permanence, and I guess it is kind of object permanence of like if something's not right in my face, I am gonna forget about it, and like really having to like discipline myself to write things down and constantly remind myself, like, but knowing that that was like not just me being lazy and forgetful, but truly something that I was struggling with. And it's not an excuse, but it's like, oh, okay. Like it's not it, like there's a reason for that. And I found that very comforting. And I think especially growing up, I'm a twin and my brother has autism. And so like, as a kid, and it's just the two of us. So as a kid, I didn't have any, let's say, neurotypical, like I was thought to be the neurotypical of the two of us. So in my mind, anything that I was going on with me, I'm like, oh, this is just like standard. Like this is baseline. Like this is something everybody deals with, not realizing that that wasn't true. So like to find that out and get that diagnosis and be like, okay, like some of these things, like some of it was hard to be like, oh, like that isn't actually like a quote unquote normal, but then to like process it and be like, but that's okay. And like, now I have tools to cope with that. Extremely validating.
I totally get that. And I think, because I mean, I have my friend Sydney, shout out Sydney. She is in med school and she got diagnosed with ADHD later in life as well. And like the feeling was like very validating for her because she thought like it was just baseline, like how everything worked. And especially, and you really talk about it, like and like a broader problem, I think, not just in medicine, but in society, is that we study symptoms a lot for how they present in men or those assigned male at birth. Yeah. And we really ignore the fact, I mean, heart attacks, for example, like are missed in women because the symptoms are presenting differently in ADHD as well. So like, I think in a way, it's a very gray feeling I have about it. Because on one hand, like I'm very happy that we're finally like getting these people diagnoses and we know, but it's so sad that so many of these people like went through this whole time thinking that. I describe it as like a car.
I think I saw someone, I think I know what you're talking about or maybe I've seen someone do another like kind of equating it to a car of like a car that has like a problem with like a, like not to call this like a problem per se, but like a leak that you're unaware of. And it's like, well, if you just keep putting in oil because you see that the oil's low, but you never fix the leak, then what is that going to do? You're still running out.
Yeah.
Over time. Yeah. So I think, and I also, I mean, that was a lot. Also the reason I really wanted to go specifically into the program I'm at. And obviously like when I was applying to PA school, I didn't tell anyone I had a number one program and tried to also kind of keep that out of my mind because I was like, I would just be happy to get in anywhere because it's such a competitive process. But this is really where I wanted to go. And especially because I feel like, and I don't know exactly how every program is, and I hope more programs are teaching this way as well, but they really emphasize that they focus a lot on acknowledging the faults in medicine. And, you know, that for so long medicine was taught as diagnosis based off of typically men or people who are assigned male at birth and who are white. And so they do put a lot of emphasis on when we talk about statistics of different diseases. And if it says like a certain race is more likely to, it's like, unless that has scientific evidence, they're like, but as a disclaimer, this may be rooted in other factors like socioeconomic, racism. Like they're like, there's some of these things that you need to kind of take at face value, because they're not just 100%. Oh, it's because of they're this race. They're like that. We can't actually say that. Or, you know, talking about like a lot, we focus a lot in health disparities. We have a whole class that focuses on health disparities, and we're working on a project right now on health literacy. And just like, I wanted all that, especially being a public health major in undergrad, because I think that is equally of value as the medical knowledge behind everything. And it's, they go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. You can't, like, I think a big one that one of my professors, I think, is like a best example has talked about is you can't just look at your patient and say, your blood pressure is high, you need to take this medication and you need to eat better. Well, you're not looking at, where does your patient live? Where do they have access? Like, what financially, what kind of food do they have access to? But also in proximity to their house, what food do they have access to? Or what can they afford the medication that you're saying they need? So I think that for so long, it's the idea that medicine could be just like, oh, here's the fix, here's the problem. But it's not that clear.
So it teaches a more holistic approach then, in a way, like.
Yeah, I think, because I know sometimes when people talk about like holistic medicine, they talk about like other stuff. And I mean, we do talk a little bit about some of like the holistic approaches to medicine. And, you know, my professors have been like, you know, as far as talking about like cultural sensitivity and stuff, it's like, don't disregard your patients for saying they want to use like a more natural method or whatever, because they're like, there is value to that. And also within people's cultures, there's value to that. So like also finding the medicine between understanding people's cultures and where they come from in that aspect of medicine too is an approach. But yeah, so I would say it is very looking at, in general, PAs, the idea is to be more holistic, but also my program specifically, I feel like is very focused on looking at the patient as a whole person and not just as a person with multiple medical issues, whatever, but who are they outside of just this one disease that they're coming in to be treated for.
That's so cool. I love that so much.
Like, I love it.
I think that's so just.
I think it's how medicine should be.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out a way to word it differently, other than just like, I wish that was like more the case throughout all fields. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of programs though that are trying to work towards that, because obviously medicine has been a certain way for so long that it's going to take time to change.
Mm-hmm.
I do think also though, my professors are also like, we're aware of all the challenges that you're faced with, and that it's like, as great as it is to try and balance all of this, it's like, okay, well, now you're looking at your patient and trying to come up with a plan to help them lower their blood pressure, and you're looking at their socioeconomic status and stuff, but you also only have 15 to 20 minutes to do it. So like, we also need to look at how do we do it with the resources we have as well. They're like, we're not expecting you to fix the whole medical system. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you find the balance between improving it, but also working with what you have so you're not burning yourself out or hitting a wall where you're like, okay, well, in theory, I know how to do this, but can I actually do it kind of deal?
Yeah. Which I feel like is a very important thing to take into account. Like, I think just personally, like, I see like so many issues with capitalism and within the country, and I'm always like, oh my gosh, like, how, like, am I going to, like, of course, like, there's ways you can, like, go about doing the other things, but also, realistically, and, like, no one get mad at me for this, I'm a 24-year-old, barely making, like, a livable wage right now. Like,
yeah,
like, not one person can fully change the system. And no one should be expected to fully change a system by themselves. And I think just kind of like that realistic ways about like seeing the issue, how can we fix it, but like in a realistic, attainable way that's so important. And I'm glad that like they kind of teach you that, to like the importance of doing that so to avoid burnout and hitting a wall.
Yeah, that's another, like they talk to us about burnout as well. And like even within PA school, like our professors are very adamant. They're like, yes, you need to do well. Yes, it requires a lot of time, but you need to take time for yourself. You need, first semester, we actually had, I think they were like technically mandatory, but they weren't going to like force everyone. But they, it was like once a month they had us come in and we would do these like mindfulness sessions, like of either, you know, a certain type of meditation or just whatever. Cause they were like, we want you to practice mindfulness because not only is it going to help you now, and not only is it going to help you yourself as a provider to take that time to be mindful, but it's going to allow you to be more present for your patients and be more focused on them. Because if you can practice that mindfulness and putting yourself to be very in the moment, you're not going to be thinking about the three other charts you have to get done. And so you're distracted and not giving your patient that you're in a consultation with right now what they need. Mm-hmm. So I think that they're very much, I mean, even one of our professors was like, I tell everyone you need to go see at least once a month one movie, which like I haven't necessarily done, but we also have streaming. So like at home, I try to at least watch one movie a month, but like, just like go see a movie, go to the park, go do something, because that extra 2 hours you didn't spend studying is not usually going to make the difference on the test, but you giving yourself a break and taking the time for yourself probably will make the difference.
I love that so much.
Yeah. Like they are very focused on making sure that we are not burning ourselves out. Mm-hmm.
Which I think is very important. And especially like as a fellow pre-health kid to a pre-health kid in undergrad, I don't feel like that was always outlaid at all. I don't think that was. If so, I missed that day. I don't know.
No one was saying that to us. No, maybe no. They just thought we would do it, but like no one was saying it.
No, I remember like even like to my non like pre-health or like pre-professional like friends or whatever. And I'm like, they worked hard too. So like, I'm not saying that, but like I would regularly like function off like 4 hours of sleep, like through undergrad.
I just think in college, yeah, in general, you didn't have, and I think it, unfortunately in a lot of academic spaces and even in work spaces, like you're not having somebody say to you, take a break. It's okay to take a break. Like, no. It's okay to go get sleep and go to bed. Like, I think one of my professors said it best, and I really have kept this in mind all year, because I think especially now with ADHD and like being treated for it and stuff, I can tell when I hit a wall at night where I like can't study anymore. So like it has helped me to be like, let me stop, go wind down, go to bed. But one of my professors said it best, that a lack of sleep and taking a test is essentially the same as driving drunk. Like there's been studies on like how your brain is functioning. And she's like, if you are not getting enough sleep before the day of a test, you might as well be taking the test drunk. Like you're not all there. Like I can't remember the exact like statistics and everything she used, but I've really kept that in mind. She's like, it is more important that you rest than that you get 2 more hours of studying in. Like you need to go to sleep and be well rested for that test. Otherwise, all the material you studied, it won't matter. Your brain won't be able to function right for this test.
Dang. That's crazy.
Yeah.
By that standard, I've probably taken a lot of tests drunk.
I know. Afterwards, I'm like, huh, okay.
Okay. Well, you didn't have to at me that hard. No, so this is actually like a really funny thing. And well, not funny, haha, but funny. Wow. So
like looking back, you're like, I can laugh it off.
But. I can laugh about it now. So during finals, in undergrad, I always got sick. And
I got sick right after, but like, I got sick
like during finals, and I was like either before or during or after, like just somewhere around that time. And I thought, I was like, oh my gosh, like the middle of December, and like our finals were like at the end of April. And so we had a May term. So I was like, what is going on with these like two weird times? And then like once the final was over, like a week, I was like back to normal, like nothing happened. And I was like, this is so crazy. And my friend Sydney, again, shout out, texted me. That's like, we're learning about cortisol. And turns out if you have high levels of cortisol, that's when, like, you get sick. So if you get really sick during final, yep, that's why. And I was like, you know, I could have just like not had this information. I could have just like been left this whole time. So I literally got so stressed, I would get sick.
Yep. It's like afterwards you're like, oh, I did this to myself.
Yeah. Yeah. So like it's funny now. It's funny now. Like not too much, but it's funny.
To find out you're like, oh, it's because I was stressing myself out so badly.
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Great.
Yeah, send in the clowns. Send in the clowns. But obviously it's a very high and intense training that you're doing, of course, because you're going to be responsible for patients. But do you ever just catch yourself looking back at just kind of like really taking in like how far you've come and everything, and just like looking back where you started?
All the time. I like, there's so many times, especially right now where I'm so close to being done with my first year, and I'm in the program lengths range. So like some PA programs are 3 years, most are about 2.5, but mine is one of the shorter ones where it is exactly 24 months. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I will just sit there and I'm like, wow, like all the information I know, how far I've come, all the skills I've learned, like, and then just even thinking back how like even a year or two ago, it still seemed like a far off dream of like, you know, like, you, when you're in like high school or whatever, and you're like, or you're a kid and you're like, I want to go into medicine, I want to be a doctor, this, that, and third. And it's that like far off thing. And I'm like, no, like I'm doing that right now. Like that's like, for so long, this is something I like dreamed of. And it's like, it's happening. I'm living this. I'm doing like having to stop and think like, oh, like, no, like that's not just like it is a reality. Like, yeah, all the time. I'll sit back and be like, wow. And I think sometimes I need to do that as well to reframe my mindset, especially when it's like a really difficult week. And my program's pretty good about trying to only have one exam a week, but sometimes it just happens. Like there's a couple every semester where we have like two exams in a week or whatever. And I'm just like, you know, there's assignments due as well and whatever. And just having to stop and take a moment and be like, but this is what I've wanted. And like, not every part of it's going to be fun, but it's what I dreamed about for so long and I'm doing it. And it really does help. And like, I don't know if you remember, there was like a trend going around on TikTok this must have been like just a few months ago, where it was like people talking about like the little things that they like get that they're doing now, because it's like, oh, because the world didn't end when I was 17, when it's like everything, like the little things, you're like, the world is ending, my world is ending, everything is like crashing down. And it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, like instead of, oh, I have to do this, that, and the third for this class, it's like, I get to do that. Like I get to do these things that I used to just dream about getting to do. And it's like, okay, like thinking about it that way, I'm like, yeah, I might be super stressed out right now studying for this clinical medicine test on, what was our last one was reproductive health. And like, that was just a massive unit, but I'm like, but it's stuff that I'm interested in. And yes, some massive amount of material, but like, this is what I've wanted to do. And like, and also reminding myself that I've done this several times over now, I'm 3 semesters in and it's been okay every time. So like, I need to stop freaking out that like, but this is going to be the time that it's not okay. Like,
no, I'm very much that way too. Cause I mean, just this past week, I was up to like 5 a.m. finishing a paper that was due Friday at 11:59. But
unfortunately, sometimes going to bed at 9:30 isn't always an option.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking like, oh, I'm turning this in like late and like it's over spring break. No one's fucking reading this thing. And I was like, also no one, it's not like he's getting up at midnight to start grading these papers. Like, let's be for real. And yeah, so every time like I didn't do well on an exam, or like every time like I had a quiz, or every time like this, this, and that happened, I'm just like, you know what? Like, and this is advice that I got from Sarah Wines, told me this. Shout out Sarah Wines. But she said, every time you have something big coming up, think about all the times you had something big coming up and you came out on top of that. So right now you're like 1,000-0 for your record.
Yeah.
So I take that to heart greatly. Also, our director of graduate studies here said there's going to be some days where you just have to half-ass something and turn it in. So like, I definitely
had professors be like, yeah, it's not always going to be your best. And sometimes that's just, it's going to be okay. You just own it. And like, you move on to the next thing. They're like, don't dwell on that one bad thing because you need to focus on the next thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Harley, we're wrapping it up a little bit, but there is just a couple more questions. But before I get to the last one, I just want to ask if you could go back and tell like your younger self an advice about your life now or like your career now, what would you tell her, or would you tell her anything?
I think, well, the first thing that does come to mind is my parents do have my best interest. It's okay. Cause I think honestly a big part of it for me was the idea of my parents always talk about this. My brother and I have been, I feel like, pretty unique in that a lot of kids change over what they want to do as like their career. But I was always that kid who knew. Like, so the idea also when my parents were like, maybe medical school isn't the route. Maybe you don't want to be a doctor, but you want to do something else. It was scary, the idea of changing, even though I was 15 and had plenty of time. But in my mind, it was like, no. I can't change that. This is what I decided on. This is what I'm going to do. And that, like, it's okay for things to change. It's okay for the route to get to something to change. Like, I mean, when I first realized that I probably needed to take time off, I was like, no. I've got to go straight in. I can't take time off. I don't want to prolong anything. And I think in my mind too, I was like, I'll be this age by the time I get out, if I take this time off and whatever. And like, it's like the 25, like we were talking about this earlier, like 25 really isn't that old. Like, and just to like let go and relax a little bit and be open to like the route of how you get to something changing. It doesn't mean you're not going to get there, I think, is really what I would go back and say.
Yeah, I think more people need to hear that. Because, I mean, at 15, I feel like you have to have your life together in some ways, which is criminal because no one does at 15. I've yet to met a single person who does. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, just, like, from now, because I'm almost a decade older. Like, the way I view the world and operate and, like, everything from 15 to like almost 25 is like vastly different.
Oh, absolutely.
And the way that I put so much pressure on myself to have that all figured out at 15 was crazy and just quite frankly unrealistic.
I think the funniest thing is finding I was the kind of person, and I'm pretty sure I did most of these in high school, but it's still so every so often sometimes I'll still do one. But in high school, I was very into the idea of like writing letters to your future self and like having them marked for like dates to open them. And I found them recently from high school. Every so often, I mean, I'll still like journal and stuff and I like to look back, but like I'm talking about the like sealed ones that are like open when and on like this day, whatever. And like seeing what I thought at 15, my like life was going to be laid out like, and that I had these like expectations like this and this is going to happen. And even still sometimes, like, we all have expectations for what we think our life is going to be, but like it's funny to look at them and like laugh a little bit too. Like,
no, the way I thought I was fully going to be married by the time like I'm 24,
and then
now I found out that like the average, like I googled this and like this is maybe a little sad, but this gave me like a little bit of like relief. The average first marriage age, like the age like when a gay man gets married for the first time, is 35.
I didn't realize it was 35, but like that's still not old, but like, I feel like we're all told, like, I think it's also hard because you see, and I don't know about you, but like, I feel like I'm seeing more and more people, maybe not people I'm close with, but like people I went to college with or whatever. I'm like, I feel like once a week you open your Instagram and somebody's getting engaged or announcing they're having a kid. And like, it did take me, I think now I'm at the point where I'm like, everybody's on a different timeline, but the last, like, I would say like 2 years when I was like out of school and stuff, it definitely was a process to like make myself realize everyone's on a different timeline and people are going to choose to do different things in different orders and people have different priorities in life. Like, I was talking to my mom about this because, you know, parents every so often, she's like, oh, like, you know, like, when do you think you'll have kids one day? And I'm like, I'm in school and that is my focus. And she gets that. And she's like, no, not right now. She's like, but when do you think? And I'm like, but I want to like get out of school, start working, enjoy some of that money and maybe be a little bit selfish and go travel and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I want a family and kids in the future, but I want to do a lot of things first. She's like, I get that. And my parents also had me like a little bit older and she was like, but I want to like also enjoy being a grandparent. I'm like, but that's on my timeline, not yours. I'm like, you did the same thing. You went and enjoyed it. And she's like, that's true. I did do like a lot of my travel and like, you know, because like you can travel with kids, but it's a different experience than traveling, you know, with your friends and whatnot. So.
No, like, hold on guys. We got to take Jimmy on the tilt-a-whirl real quick. See you later. No. And like, I'm on the opposite spectrum of that. So like my dad, there's like 6 years age difference between my parents. So my dad got married, I think 28. Mm. And then my mom got married at like 22, 21.
Yeah.
Somewhere on there. So like by my mom's standards, I should already be into 2 years. And like, she doesn't have that standard for me, but like if I was like following her timeline, I would be 2 years.
Oh, I see people talk about that. They're like, my parents did this, this, and this by my age, and I'm over here.
I'm over here trying to like mate soft lies for my defense. like very, very different things going on. But no, I think, yeah, I think once you get out of that, like, headspace and expectations you hold for yourself younger and like really see the world and everything, see all the different timelines, there's like peace in that, knowing like success doesn't look one way.
Absolutely.
Oh. And Hartley, this is my last question, and this is kind of like less of a question, more of like a catch-all kind of thing.
Yeah.
But is there anything else you would like to discuss or tell our audience today?
I'm trying to think of like, because I know we had talked earlier about like advice for PA school. And I think, I guess maybe going along that same line of like advice is that, okay, one specific, this specific to PA school, but I think a lot of programs probably also have this, stay off of any of those forums where people talk about their application process, or especially looking up the ones for like people who are doing like interviews for the same program as you. And like when they heard back and all this stuff, because I don't know, I can't speak for other professions and like programs for going into different professions, but I know for PA, it can so differ school to school, year to year, what they're looking for in an applicant. So people could get on that forum and be like, here are all my stats that got me into this school or got me an interview, and here's what I talked about in my essays. And then somebody else who also got into that school and also got an interview there has completely different stats, because they don't just look at what you got on some, a lot of programs are moving away from the GRE, but some do the GRE still. So like it's going to be a mix of looking at your essays, your GRE scores, your hours, and what you did for your hour. Like there's always, and what people said in their interviews too. Like there's not one way to be the perfect candidate. And even sometimes, like in my experience of applying to PA school, where I went for undergrad also had a PA school. And I was in the honors college at my undergrad, and they really emphasized, and I do believe this, like I don't think it's a lie or anything, but they really emphasized that they like to take their own alumni into their grad programs, and especially into the health sciences. And like, it was kind of portrayed to me while I was still an undergrad and had like talked to people at the school for their PA program, like, oh, if you're in the honors college here and an alumni and with your GPA, like you're getting in. They're like, it's almost a given. Like we basically take every honors student. And I think the girls who were graduating with me who went straight into PA school there was like six or seven of them in a 36 person cohort that got in and went there. So I'm thinking, oh yeah, like that does seem pretty true. So it's like, okay, when I'm applying to school, I feel like I have one school where in the case of PA school, there's no such thing as like a safety, but I'm like, okay, I have a place where like, I'm likely going to get an interview. The day I got into my program here, the next day I got rejected without interview from that program, from my undergrads.
No.
So I was like, okay, I can laugh at this right now because I got in somewhere and I got into somewhere I'm really excited about. But if that had happened, if I hadn't heard back from this program and I got in rejected that interview, oh my God, I was pretty good throughout the process with handling the rejections because I had already prepared myself. And I think that is a big thing, like with PA, with med school, with any like highly competitive program you're trying to get into, preparing yourself that I may not get in the first time around and that's okay. I think that's another thing. I think a lot of people who go into this, like we're not necessarily used to handling rejection or being used to not getting something necessarily the first time around. Like, you know, you worked really hard, you put it like, I don't think a lot of us are used to that, but really putting yourself in that mindset of it's going to be okay if I don't get in the first time around. I'm going to figure it out. I'm either going to reapply or I'm going to, you know, decide to take some time and do something else, whatever it is. So I had already been in that mindset, but I think that one would have hurt a lot. But also within that of just like, again, being open to that change. I think another thing with when you're applying to highly competitive stuff like this and like family members know and stuff, I did have a lot of family members that as I was hearing back and, you know, I knew statistically, like most people get into one or two programs out of what they apply to. I applied to 9 PA schools. I got 2 interviews. I got into one school and I'm like, it's not something like I feel like I need to like hide or anything. I have people in my cohort who got more interviews or got into more schools and applied to about the same number as me or applied to a little more. And it's like, it just really depends on the school and what they want. And so like, I'm okay with that. I'm not like embarrassed that I didn't get more interviews, whatever, but I had family members or like family friends or people say to me, they're like, if I was like, yeah, like I heard back from the school, I didn't get an interview, like, or whatever. And they'd be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, I can't believe that doesn't make sense. Like, how could this be happening to you? Like, you're so smart. Like, you're so like, this is what you're meant to do. And I'm like, but I just know the reality of how competitive it is. I was like, I made my peace that I like, in reality, a lot of people do have to apply to more than one application cycle to get in. So I was like, I'm okay with it. Like one of my friends one time was like, do you need ice cream? Like, what do you need me to do? Like, what do you need? I'm like, no, like I'm okay. Like, it's all right. So like, just, it's not easy to get rejected, but just kind of knowing that, like, if this is what you want, it's going to work out, even if it's not on, again, that timeline that you're expecting it to.
I think that's so true. And I mean, for my PhD, for example, I know it's not the same thing, but like, I can resonate with that. Like, I applied to, I think, 5 schools. I got interviews at 2, got accepted to 1.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's just the nature of like these academic competitive programs is just,
yeah,
one, yeah, sometimes what you want to do, there's not a lot of programs, which makes it even more competitive. And then just some of them, like the size of the program, and yeah, it's like, it's tough. But then I think if you go in with the mindset of like making your peace with like, it's gonna be okay if it doesn't work out exactly how I wanted it to, like, you're better off.
Yeah,
and that's how I was. It definitely was better for me.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm glad that you had like that good support system. Be like, do you need anything? Like, This
I appreciated it, but it was just so funny to me because I'm like, no, I'm not that upset about it. Like
the way they were more upset about the rejection than you were. That's so funny.
Oh, absolutely. I was like, I think people are more upset for me than I am for myself. Like,
well, I think it like also helps to knowing that like it's not like you, and like for lack of a better term, like lost a spot to like idiots or like something like that. It's like other people who are also talented. At least that's the way I looked at it. So I don't know if that helps or not.
Oh, no, I definitely think it was like you were, it was just like, okay, I kind of looked at it as like this movie wasn't the place I was meant to be. Because I absolutely feel like I am exactly where I was meant to be for PA school.
Same. That's how I feel about my program too. And yeah. Like, I feel like when you know, and
yeah.
Yeah. And you seem to be doing great. I know like it's probably a lot more battles than like anyone knows, but like you seem to be handling it like a boss. So
thank you.
Shout out to you.
Thanks.
Well, Harley, I just want to thank you again for coming onto the show, chatting with us, and telling us your story.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun. I enjoy this in our also our very long tangent on Grey's Anatomy, but
you know, it's called the semi-professional academic for a reason. We don't have to do this whole time. And
it's not all just academics. Well, we're not just our programs.
Yeah, that's the whole purpose of the show. Like, we're not just what we do. Like, we have a personality. And also, Reese Hunter, who was on a previous show, shout out Reese, he pointed out, and I'm going to add an amendment to it. He said, professionalism is hard when you're just naturally hilarious. And I'm gonna add a little tangent to that. I was like,
oh.
Professionalism is hard when you're just that girl. And I just feel, you know, I just feel like, you know, like we're that girl. I just feel like, you know,
like you can be professional in your, but like I think also there's a difference between like being professional and like you can preserve who you are as a person and be professional at the same time. There's a balance.
I agree. I feel like this may be bad, but I feel like people who feel like the need to be like, I have to be professional all the time. I feel like they just don't have a personality. Like I fear.
I think there's also a difference between saying things that I'm like, maybe that's an inside thought and being unprofessional.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh. Or like you can maintain being professional without it being like this, like, whole different persona.
Agreed.
And if there's things that are considered unprofessional that you're saying, honestly, I think sometimes that's like also a reevaluation of what are you, again, the insight that like, what are you saying out loud that's so bad it's considered unprofessional?
That's true. That I fully agree with that.
Yeah.
Although I do just be saying out of pocket things. So like maybe I'm not the maybe I'm not the best sounding board for that. But but you know,
I think what is considered professional versus unprofessional is also changing, especially in the age of social media. And I feel like we're told to be so careful what we post, but then I look at it and I'm like, but I think most of what people post isn't necessarily bad. Like,
I don't think so either. I mean, like there's just blatant, like wrongs such as like,
yeah,
discrimination, hate speech, like yeah. That of course, but like, we have to learn the difference between like what is professional, what's not professional, and what's unprofessional. Cause I feel like there's a lot more nuance to that than what people give. So I just say semi, cause you know, we encompass it all.
There we go.
Well, Harley, before we go, is there any place that our guests can follow you to keep up with your career and maybe get some like more advice from like your personal experiences?
Yeah, I've started kind of venturing into that with my TikTok. Obviously, it started with me making videos about Grey's Anatomy for fun, especially when everything kind of, you know, shut down with the pandemic. But I actually just needed to remind myself what my username is. So I pulled it up really quick. But it's Harley with 2Ys_P on TikTok.
Mm-hmm. And Harley's TikTok will also be linked in our video description, so be sure to go check her out. Like, her content is fantastic and entertaining all at once.
If you're a Grey's Anatomy fan, lots of commentary on the new season.
Well, Harley, thank you again for coming on the show. I had a blast, and just thank you for taking time out of your busy day to chat with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed this so much.
Me too. And to all of you at home, remember, some thoughts are inside thoughts, some are outside thoughts. So might as well just say it all. Be equally shocked as what comes out of your mouth as everyone else. Have a good evening, everyone. Bye.